This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
They used to be regular guests in our homes, anytime we chose, entertaining us when we switched on our radio and television sets. Now it's time to hear again the voices that came out of the glow. This afternoon, it's our second last program for the year. We hope you have something special ahead for your Christmas. And, of course, we have a special Christmas program for you in a week. But today, Chris McCabe introduces songs by the Beach Boys and talks of a concert of theirs he saw. And we take another look at this colourful world. First, though, Steve and myself, Paul F., have for you an extract from The Two Ronnies. Hello to Jim Smart in Papanui, Blair Smith of Brindwa, and John Newman in Burnside. We also hope finds you in good spirits, Lorna and Wilf Metzger in Linwood.
Morning.
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 Lovely day, isn't it?
Beautiful day.
Beautiful day.
Beautiful day. Chilly but crisp, frosty but nice.
Bracing and bright.
Lit in the air,
good for the blood.
Gives you a glow.
Spring in your step.
Makes you feel good.
Top of the world.
Walking on air.
So full of beans.
I quite agree.
Been for your holes?
At the weekend.
Anywhere nice?
Cornwall for us. Same every year. Booked it all up. Bought two to loo.
Monty for me.
Going abroad, fiddle-dee-dee.
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 Seen this bit here?
What does it say?
Says that a man, age 42, took a young girl back to his flat, gave her some drinks, then she passed out. When she woke up, she was in bed, in the Near East, and nothing else. Know what I mean? Man of the world, need I say more? Words of the wise.
Oh, you're a one.
Rubbish like that makes me feel sick. Who wants to read that sort of filth? Vicars and scouts, orgies and drugs, bosoms and boots, brazen young bits, flaunting their flesh, showing their thighs, all that they've got. World's in a mess, going to pot, sign of the times. God, I feel hot. Think I'll trip off.
Have you gone mad?
I think he's snapped, gone round the twist. Give us a kiss.
Get back, you fool.
I want a kiss.
Leave her alone.
Keep out of this.
I knew you cared. I had a hunch. Come to my arm. Mind my packed lunch.
Here?
Now is the time. I want you now.
George, is this wise?
I love your lips. I love your eyes. I love your nose.
Take me by force.
I love your... Woo! Here's Terry Crews.
I say, I'm most awfully sorry. I don't know what came over me.
That's quite all right. Say no more about it. Just one of those things. George.
Thank you so much.
Wouldn't mind, but it's the same thing every day.
One thing about these white people, they got a great sense of rhythm.
Train of events. From The Two Ronnies, Barker and Corbett, with Josephine Tewson. A further episode from our serial for you now.
Please, put your arms around me. Kiss me.
What?
Kiss me.
That's how it began. A foggy night, a lurking peril, and a lovely girl who was too young to die.
Thank you. Shot through the heart, Mr. Chester. So that wherever Jan Carter was planning to fly to, we can be pretty sure the trip is off.
But are you sure that the man who was shot was Berridge, the pilot of the plane?
Oh, Mr. Chester.
Well, there have been cases of mistaken identity before. Even the police...
The dead man was Berridge, all right, and he certainly ran charter flights when the price was right.
Oh, he was known to the police.
Oh, yes, been in and out of jail for years for smuggling, mostly. He's no particular loss, of course.
I don't get it. If, as you said, Jan had already contacted him, where is she now?
Well, one might assume that she was with Berridge when he was killed.
Are you suggesting...
I am not suggesting anything. Please let me finish. If she was with Berridge when he was shot, it's reasonable to suppose that she panicked and ran.
Where to?
I'd say the coffee was perked enough, wouldn't you?
What? Oh, yes, I'd forgotten it. Let's take it inside.
Fine. If you can manage the coffee and the sugar, I'll bring the cups.
Being a police inspector, you just can't help organizing everything, I suppose.
Organizing? Oh, the coffee.
This is my flat, isn't it?
Yes, well, if I hadn't pushed things along, you mightn't have offered me any coffee at all. And believe me, I need it.
I suppose you didn't get much sleep last night either.
Not much. And by the time we asked all the routine questions about the dead man, and got nowhere, of course, it was close to daylight. Pardon me if I go ahead, won't you? Oh, I needed that.
I expect you got some information about where Jan Carter went.
A minute ago, you asked me straight out where she'd gone. What are you doing now, Mr. Chester, being subtle?
Well, I doubt if it makes much difference what I'm doing. You don't intend to tell me anything that matters.
Nonsense. I've already told you the pilot who was to fly Jan Carter out of England was murdered. Incidentally, it was out of England, wasn't it? To Europe, perhaps? Oh, well, I didn't really expect an answer. But if you accuse me of not telling you anything that matters, I must say something. See, a man is dead. I'm sure that matters. It matters to him, and it certainly matters to the police.
Well, I never knew Berridge. I had nothing to do with his death. You can't expect it to matter to me.
Oh, but I can. You see, there's just the possibility that you might know more about his death than you think.
What? How? Look, Jan Carter didn't have a gun, and if you have some crazy idea in your head that I lent her mine, well, then you can start thinking again right now.
Oh, what's this?
This is my pistol. For which, as you know, I have a license. Take a look at it. Hasn't been fired lately. Hasn't been fired in I can't remember how long. And I didn't give it to Jan Carter.
Now, really, I can assure you, all these loud protestations are quite unnecessary. Oh, I'm certainly enjoying this coffee.
Charlton, Jan Carter didn't kill Berridge. She had no reason to.
No, of course she didn't kill him. I know that.
Well, then. But you said... I mean, you implied...
No, no, I didn't. You're a bit jumpy today, Mr. Chester. Not quite your usual smart self, I think. Anyway, we know that Jan Carter didn't kill Berridge. But I was hoping that you might be able to help us.
Why me? I wasn't there.
No, but you were present when Blaney was killed, weren't you?
Blaney? Oh, yes. We were struggling in the room. A shot came through the window.
Well, how interesting. That's the first time you've admitted to being present when Blaney was killed. You really aren't yourself today.
I suggest you finish your coffee and go, Inspector, and you might bear in mind that you're not here officially.
Oh, I'll remember that. And I really must be getting to the office. Have a lot to do. Well, I just thought you might be interested to know that Blaney and Berridge were killed by the same person.
What? How do you know that?
The bullets are the same. And rather unusual. .243 Winchester.
.243? Are you sure? Doesn't sound right somehow.
The .243 is for a high-powered rifle. A small bullet, of course, but backed by a terrific wallop in an oversized cartridge. And strictly for a man who shoots always to kill. Ah, you're here, Sergeant. Good.
Good morning, sir. Once again.
Well, let's go in and add up what we have,
Yes, sir. Oh, is it all right if I bring my tea along?
No, surely.
Would you care to
have
it?
No, thanks. I've just come from having coffee.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yes, with Michael Chester.
Eh?
Look out, you'll spill your tea. Go along in, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Michael Chester, sir? I thought you decided to finish with him after he tried to help that girl get away.
I was annoyed with Chester. I may even have said some very unpleasant things about him, but... As for finishing with him, well, I don't know that we can do that.
You mean because the girl got away?
That, and the fact that I think Chester might have seen the man who shot Blaney, and, of course, Berridge.
Might have seen him.
Sergeant, I do wish you'd do something about that mug of tea.
Pardon, sir?
Well, either drink it, man, or get rid of it somewhere. Every time I say something that surprises you slightly, you look like spraying the whole office with departmental tea.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I'll drink it. It's getting cold anyway.
Yes, well, while you're doing that, let me review some unsurprising facts. Now, we know that Blaney was working for Slade at the time he was killed.
Yes, sir, but we have been able to establish for sure that it was Slade who put him on the trail of Jan Carter. Slade denied all knowledge of that. He said Blaney worked for him simply as a collector of gambling debts.
Quite so. Which could be true or not. What I find improbable is that Slade ordered the killing of Blaney.
It's hardly the way he'd do it, sir. I mean, high-powered rifles and so on. A bit fancy for Slade, I'd say.
You finished your tea?
Oh, yes, sir, yes.
Good. I just wanted to be sure before I surprised you by agreeing with you.
About Slade?
I believe you're right. Slade wouldn't employ someone with a rifle to kill Blaney. I'll go further. I doubt if Slade knows any more about the Blaney killing than we do.
Well, as a matter of fact, sir, you've sort of taken the words out of my mouth. I was going to say very much the same thing.
Well, that's very bright of you, Sergeant, I'm sure.
Thank you, sir. I was going to say, assuming we have to deal now with a new party in this setup, it's rather difficult to work out where he fits in.
Fits in?
Well, sir, whose side is he on? He kills Blaney at a time when Blaney was probably endangering the safety of Jan Carter, and also, as you say, Michael Chester.
And yet he also kills Berridge, a man hired to help Jan Carter.
Exactly, sir. The point is, does this man want to help Jan Carter or not?
Help her do what, Sergeant?
Well, she's up to, sir. You never explained that part.
Yeah. Well, never mind. Your theorizing is very interesting, nevertheless, Sergeant.
Yes. There's only one thing, sir.
Yes, I know. I'm assuming, of course, that Jan Carter is still alive.
Mike?
Oh, is that you, Eve?
How are you?
Fine. Just fine.
You didn't go to Mars after all?
What's that?
Well, when you left here, I asked you where you were going, and you said you just might take a rocket trip to Mars. Oh, where are you, Mike? At your flat?
Where am I? Eve, you just rang me.
What? Oh, so I did. I'd forgotten. How crazy can you get?
Well, look, Eve, if there's nothing important...
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, about last night. Perhaps we shouldn't take too much notice of what we said. We were both tired and...
Eve, look, you told me you're not prepared to get on the merry-go-round again, and I guess you have something. We can't go on with this on-again, off-again...
No, don't, Mike. Don't try to answer everything on the phone in 10 short seconds. It doesn't work. I ought to know. I've tried it.
What are you getting at?
I'm not sure. I just think it's fantastic that two intelligent people... Well, there I go, calling myself intelligent. I hated it when you said it.
Eve, look, and... I'm sorry, but I don't feel like chatting right now.
Well, no, I suppose you don't. But, Mike, can't we... Oh, dear, someone at the door.
What's that?
I said there's someone at the door.
Well, okay, let's cut it short, then. There really isn't anything to say now, Eve.
That's a pretty wretched sort of admission for a married couple, isn't it? Nothing to say.
Well, maybe we can argue about it.
Oh, shut up.
What?
No, not you, Mike. The door. I don't know why people have to...
Look, go and answer it, Eve. We'll talk some other time.
Well, can I get you there, at your flat?
I don't know. Look, I'll phone you.
Promise?
Sure, I promise. Bye now.
Goodbye, Mike. And don't forget to ring. I want to talk to you. Mike... Someone's selling something. I'll... Yes, what is it?
Mrs. Chester?
What of it?
Let me, Mrs. Chester, please.
Let you in? Well, what is this? Some new sales approach?
You don't understand.
I certainly don't. What's the matter with you? Well, Who are you looking about for?
I don't want anyone to see me coming here.
You don't what?
Please, Mrs. Chester, I'll explain inside and let me in.
You are the most extraordinary young woman I've ever... Now, look here, if you're selling anything, I can assure you this is not, I repeat, not my day for buying, so I suggest you...
Will you stop arguing and let me in? Don't you know who I am? Can't you guess?
Guess? But I have never...
Mrs. Chester, I'm Jan Carter.
Jan
Carter... Now, will you let me in?
Eve was understandably astonished, for this was a switch only Jan herself could have dreamed up. Inspector Charlton certainly wouldn't have expected her to turn to Eve for help, and I... How could I anticipate that my wife would ever be approached by Jan Carter, the girl I loved who was too young to die?
It's time for the last of our short series of Vignettes of Life.
Vignettes of Life. Stories of people and the way they live. We present Baldy Bill's story. Despite 7 years recently spent in jail, Baldy Bill still retains the elegance of dress and ease of manner which helped to make his career as a criminal a great success. But here we find him telling a friend the story of one failure at least.
What if he did do 7 years in jail? We all make mistakes.
I wouldn't have done that if one little piece of goods hadn't gone in the box and made me out a liar. Her people had plenty of money. She'd come to the city to try and make a name for herself on the stage or something.
And fell for the well-dressed man about town,
well,
eh?
Sure, why not? Anyhow, the night I did this job, when I got pinched, I wanted her to swear I was with her at the time, see?
And wanted her to be your alibi Ike sort of thing?
No, she wouldn't. She told the truth. I went up for 7 years. I had some letters of hers put away where they were safe. Letters it wouldn't do her family any good to see. When I came out, I looked for her.
Found her?
Oh, saw her in the street. Told her I wanted 200 quid. Or people would know about those letters.
And she kicked?
Sure, she kicked all right. But in the end, I made arrangements with her. I was to take the letters to her place, and she was to have the 200 quid. She didn't tell me anything about her husband.
She had a husband then?
Husband? He was a homicidal maniac. I went there on the night we arranged. The old place seemed to be pretty dark. You see, it was after midnight. Anyhow, I knocked on the door.
And the husband opened it, I expect.
Sure, the husband opened it. And he said to me...
Come in. Are you the man with the letters?
Yes, I'm supposed to see a lady.
That lady's my wife. Come in. Along this passage.
Hey, what about a bit of light?
There's enough light here for me. In there, that's right. Now, have you got those letters?
Sure, and where's the 200 quid? You don't get any letters without I see the money first, see?
Oh, no? What about this?
Hey, now, put that gun away.
Give me those letters or I'll kill you and take them. Come on, I want those letters. I'll show you I mean it.
Hey, for heaven's sake, Governor.
That made a mess of the carpet. The next one will make a mess of you. You cringing little scoundrel trying to blackmail the woman I made my wife. I ought to kill you in any case.
Yeah, no, please, I was only joking. I don't want that 200 quid.
Then give me those letters. You vile little toad.
Yeah.
I'd be doing the world a favour if I did kill you. Maybe I'd save other husbands and other wives. My heavens, the more I look at you...
No, put down the gun, Governor. Now, look. Here's the letters.
Yeah, that's better. Now, if I ever hear of you or see you again, I won't waste any time. I'll kill you with my bare hands.
You won't see me again. Honest, you won't, Governor. No, you got the letters. Now, let me out. Hey, now, see, now, just let me out nice and peaceful, like. No, don't shoot.
And you got out, eh?
Sure. He was working himself up to such a pitch, he would have killed me. The things he said to me, the things he called me. Oh, you've got no idea.
Oh, well, anyway, you should have found out that the girl had a husband.
Yes. Well.
Did you ever see the hubby again?
Yes, I saw him again. Only he wasn't her husband.
Oh, what?
It was her.
What?
The girl herself. I told you she was on the stage. She'd done pretty well for herself, too. Now, look, there's her photo.
Well, let's have a look.
Yes, but read what it says underneath.
Miss Pearl Lancaster.
Sure, the famous male impersonator.
It's Out of the Glow, radio and TV nostalgia, with Steve Price at the panel and myself, Paul Featherston. Here's our concert goer, Chris McCabe.
I've seen the Beach Boys twice. First at QE2 Park, February 1980, and in November 2015 in the Bay Park Arena, Tauranga. Now, the second concert was a lot better than the first. Let's be honest, at QE2 Park, they basically came on and said, without saying it, "We don't want to be here." Quickly did the songs and were keen to get off. But I'm pleased to say they had changed their minds in 2015. First up from the Beach Boys is Do It Again. And the music you're hearing comes from their 50th anniversary CD, which is exactly what was played in Tauranga, and I'll come back later on with personnel changes through it.
Celebration concert tour. Please welcome from Hawthorne, California, the original Beach Boys, David Lee Marks, Bruce Johnston, Alan Jardine, Michael Edward Love, and Brian Wilson.
It's a
was the Beach Boys doing it again. Let's go to God Only Knows, written by Brian Wilson and Tony Asher, and of course it came from Pet Sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Boys in Tauranga, which was, as I said before, Bay Park Arena, that's about the size of the Pioneer Stadium here in Christchurch. They were very slick. And the makeup of the Beach Boys then was a bit different to the CD. Brian Wilson's on the CD, but he didn't want to go and visit Winston Peters at Tauranga. You're tuned to Plains FM 96.9, listening to the Beach Boys in concert and some good vibrations from 1966.
Yeah. Gotta keep those loving good vibrations happening with her.
Sing along, it's all right.
Gotta keep those loving good vibrations happening with her.
On the CD, The Personnel, Brian Wilson, Mike Love, Al Jardine, Bruce Johnston and David Marks. In Tauranga we had Mike Love, Bruce Johnston, David Marks, Scott Foskett and John Castle. As I said before, Brian Wilson stayed home.
Thank you.
As I said, all this music of the Beach Boys is taken from their 50th anniversary tour, and Brian Wilson did not come out to Tauranga. But about 6 months later, he, Brian, performed with his own band in the Auckland area. Unfortunately, I did not get to that concert. Beach Boys in concert on Plains FM.
Down! I'm swinging 60s. I'm 1480!
Thanks again, Chris. In 2019, Chris McCabe will be back to speak about acts he saw in concert. We end today with glimpses at this colourful world, and this is especially for Bob Gant at Church Corner and Chris Despera in Aranui.
This colourful world, true stories of the strange and the unusual. Some of the world's most fascinating tales are linked with the sea and the men and ships who sail on her. Stories spring readily to mind, and history abounds with characters like Bartholomew Diaz, Magellan, Sir Francis Drake, and Columbus, whose courageous exploits vividly colour its interesting pages. But the sea has its secrets and mysteries too, some of which have never been explained. Mysteries like the one surrounding the Australian ship Waratah, which unaccountably disappeared with all hands off the South African coast. No wreckage was ever washed ashore, and no radio messages were received saying that the ship might be in difficulties. To this day, no one knows how her fate was sealed in the ocean depths. Equally as strange is the fantastic story of the Marie Celeste.
On December the 5th, 1872, the brigantine De Gracia, bound from New York to Gibraltar, was knifing through the Atlantic midway between the Azores and the coast of Portugal when one of her lookouts reported a sail ahead. Captain Morehouse and First Mate Oliver DeVoe of the De Gracia watched the strange ship closely as they drew nearer.
The crew on that ship must be drunk. Look at the way she's rolling around.
They've got all the sails set, but they're not making any use of them. Hey, hand me the telescope.
Can you see anything?
That's the Marie Celeste.
The Marie Celeste? But she left New York 8 days before we did.
I must have been becalmed. That's funny. There's no one at the wheel. I can't see a soul on deck.
I'll give it a hail.
Ahoy, Marie Celeste! Ahoy!
Go up alongside her. I want to have a closer look.
Repeated hailing failed to bring anyone on deck of the Marie Celeste, so Captain Morehouse decided to board her. The boat was lowered and the captain and first mate were rowed across to the wallowing ship.
This is a queer business, DeVoe. The sails are all set. The ship seems to be seaworthy. But there's no one sailing her.
Maybe they're all below, sick or something.
Let's go down to the cabin.
Right, sir.
Everything seems all right down here.
There's still clothes scattered about. And look, this bunk's been slept in and not made.
There's the impression of a head on the pillow. Small head, too.
Well, the captain had his wife and young daughter aboard. This must have been the daughter's bunk.
But they've gone.
Whatever they are, they left in a hurry. The captain's sea boots and oilskin are still hanging behind the door.
Well, let's look in the crew's quarters. We might find something there.
Just the same as it was in the cabin. Nothing's out of place. They didn't even take their pipes with them.
There's no sign of any panic or struggle. A captain, his wife and daughter, and a crew of seven have just disappeared.
The Marie Celeste was taken to Gibraltar, where an inquiry was held. The ship was found to be completely seaworthy in all respects, had suffered no damage, and was well provisioned. But no explanation was forthcoming of why she was deserted. Since that time, many theories have been put forward, but none of them have ever been proved. 10 people abandoned the Marie Celeste in mid-ocean and simply disappeared.
Another story of the sea and its creatures from Canada, which has a direct bearing on everyday life.
A few years ago, a Canadian marine biologist was making a survey of the Canadian fishing industry. As part of the survey, he traveled in a small fishing boat to the northern fishing grounds almost within the Arctic Circle. With the help of the crew, a large trawling net had been set and then hauled aboard. The biologist and the captain examined the catch.
Mostly cod.
Yes, there's a lot of other stuff we'll have to look at, though.
You know, it's a funny thing. We catch a lot of cod up here now. Yet 50 years ago, it was just about unknown.
Yeah, they seem to have moved north about 700 miles. Over in Greenland, cod's almost replaced meat as a food. A few years ago, though, it was never heard of.
Hey, what's that queer-looking thing there?
Hmm? Hey, it looks like a wolf eel.
Wolf eel? Never heard of that before. Never seen anything like it.
Well, I'm not surprised. This is a tropical fish.
Tropical? Then what's it doing way up here in the Arctic?
Here's something else. A pilot fish. Another visitor from the tropics.
Say, you sure you're not making a mistake? Them things wouldn't come here. The water's too cold.
The marine biologist checked the strange fish carefully, but there was no mistake. They were quite definitely tropical fish. In later trawls, he found specimens of other marine life, which were usually found only in tropical waters. The captain of the fishing boat was puzzled.
But what's it mean? Why are these fish here when they ought to be hundreds of miles south?
Well, it ties up with what other researchers have been saying for a long time. The Arctic is warming up. Unless the water was warm, these fish couldn't live here.
Aye. Well, maybe that's why the cod have moved north.
Yes. And there have been reports of herring and halibut being found in Arctic waters, too.
Does that mean the ice is melting?
Yeah, it must be.
But if it does, won't it make the sea deeper?
Oh, yes. Scientists have estimated that when the last ice age struck the world, the level of the oceans fell 400 feet.
Well, what would happen if all the ice at the Arctic melted?
The sea level would rise about 200 feet. That means nearly every big city in the world would be underwater.
The ice in the Arctic has been melting slowly for the past 20,000 years. But in the last 50 years, it's been melting at an unprecedented rate. It may not be long before many cities, including London and New York, will have to face the problem of flooding by sea.
The invention of gunpowder, or black power, as it is also known, changed the course of history from the point of view of both peace and war. Its blasting power enabled man to do work normally requiring great manpower and sheer brute force. And when it was used in the introduction of siege artillery, near the end of the Middle Ages, the defensive value of feudal castles and other fortifications became a thing of the past. Since World War II, gunpowder has given way to higher and more powerful forms of explosive. Necessity has indeed proved the mother of invention. And the need for a particular type of explosive provides our next intriguing story.
During the Second World War, the French resistance forces operating inside France were invaluable to the Allies. I sabotaged railways, bridges, factories, munition dumps, and seriously hindered the German war effort. British Secret Service agents were dropped by parachute to coordinate the activities of the resistance. One of them, whose code name was Jean, had a very special mission.
Did you bring the explosives we asked for?
Yes. I have them here in this bag. Yeah, there.
What is this? Loaves of bread?
Taste a piece.
Are you an imbecile? We asked for explosives and you bring us loaves of bread.
And also some flour. Or rather, something that looks like flour.
Is this some kind of English joke?
No, Monsieur Raoul. Please, taste a piece of this bread. Here.
Well, it is bread.
Are you sure?
But of course you think I do not know what bread tastes like.
No, Monsieur. This is not bread, nor is this flour. It's a new explosive. I brought it here to test it under actual guerrilla warfare conditions.
The new explosive, called HMX, was the result of years of experiments. It looked, smelt, and tasted like flour, could be baked into edible bread, and yet still remain a powerful explosive. But it hadn't been tested under operational conditions. Raoul and Jean chose a railway bridge for the first experiment.
The charges have been laid as you instructed.
Did the guards see you?
No. They are still at the far end of the bridge.
Mm. Well, I'll fire it. Give me the battery.
Here it is. It seemed ridiculous to be placing loaves of bread on the piers instead of sticks of gelignite.
Those loaves will give the Germans indigestion. Is everyone clear?
Yes.
Then here goes.
Parbleu, it works!
Yes, perfectly. When the smoke's cleared, I think we'll find the bridge a total wreck.
This is fantastic. Imagine blowing up a bridge with loaves of bread.
And it means you'll be able to carry your explosives around with you and keep them in your homes without fear of the Germans finding them.
Yes, I had not thought of that. The Boche will think it is ordinary flour. We can even offer it to them to eat.
Once again, Allied scientists had dealt a blow for victory. Apart from being a powerful explosive, HMX could be kept openly right under the noses of the Germans without fear of savage reprisal.
Another strange but factual happening in this colorful world. You have been listening to This Colorful World, true stories of the odd and the unusual, recorded in the studios of EMI. And His Master's Voice production.
You see, nothing is new, and I think we already knew that. That program was recorded in 1959, and even then, they were talking about global warming. This was the theme to the Rockford Files. Kathy Price and Paul F. have to leave you now. We'll return for a Christmas get-together in 1 week. Amongst those on the guest list, apart from yourself, of course, is Anne Murray, Elvis, the team from Minder, John Dix, The Lives, and the residents at a certain address at Railway Cuttings in Cheam. Look after yourself, and at this time of year, we certainly hope life will be kind to you. Talk to you in a week. Out of the Glow is an Ear Media presentation recorded at WebMad Christchurch.